I decided that this is the best way for me to do sex episodes a month from now. I figured out that I need to conclude by discussing the impact of sexuality upon women from our misogynistic society. So this is by Susanna Wise, season 14, 2015, everydayfeminism.com. 6 reasons telling women their powers and their sexuality is not empowering. One night, my college boyfriend, two of his female friends, and I were driving around aimlessly and then stopped at a McDonald's. He ordered a strawberry milkshake, which he didn't finish, saying he'd just leave it in his room and drink it tomorrow. "That's gross," one of his friends said. We all nodded. "I do it all the time," he shrugged. "At least refrigerated," the other advised. "Nothing happened to me before. Only you could convince him," the first one said, directing her gaze, G-A-Z-E, toward me. She tapped me into a cultural trope, so I immediately knew what she meant. "If you drink that tomorrow, I won't have sex with you." Pause. "If you drink that tomorrow, I won't have sex with you," put her out quickly. I was the woman in the relationship, which meant he always wanted sex. I granted or denied it to him, and I used my power to grant or deny sex to control his behavior. Except that's not how it really was at all. I wanted sex more often than he did. It was presumptuous to assume he would want it that night, but admitting that would make me seem undesirable, abnormal, and manly. Examining pop culture. It's easy to see how I knew what my boyfriend's friend meant with the 5 simple words "only you can convince him" in quotations, so I felt under, and why I felt unfeminine for not actually following that script. In the movie The Hot Chick, the protagonist flirts with a barista to get free coffee as a woman and is disappointed when she can't accomplish this after a spell turns into a man. There are even women's, but as far as I can find, not men's underwear with the words "quote unquote access denied" scrawled across the front, implying that it's empowering for women to deny access to their bodies. Women have lauded this type of power as feminist. In the video for Anaconda, Nicki Minaj, who I'm cool with, I don't have a problem with her, slaps Drake's hand, and I don't have a problem with Drake, you know, I'm cool with Drake. I don't know them personally, I just don't have any problems with these people, you know. Nicki Minaj slaps Drake's hand left. She teases him with a lap dance, which one article reports in the Huffington Post claim shows her power and feminist attitude, because as he becomes enchanted by her sexuality, shows the power. Another article in Bitch, that's what they called the article. I didn't call it that. Saw Nicki Minaj's rejection in the video as a statement that, quote unquote, her body belongs to her. The message that a lap dance is not permission to touch anyone is an important one about autonomy and consent. But a woman shouldn't need to deny permission to demonstrate her power. Having autonomy is power in and of itself. Whether a woman lets someone touch her or not shouldn't provide any indication of how powerful she is at all. We could do better to empower women. We could teach them to be sex as a mutually enjoyed activity, not a pursuit of men that women may choose to indulge or reject. If we really want women to feel their bodies belong to them, we should teach them to explore their own desires rather than merely respond to others. If you still think the notion that women can withhold sex to get what they want is empowering, here are some reasons to reconsider it. One, it objectifies women. The idea that women attain control by listening to men's desires plays to the age-old notion that women's worth lies in their abilities to produce erections. One of the greatest powers a woman has is the power of her sex, author and speaker Rick Johnson writes in Pat Fields. By making looks paramount to women's empowerment, this attitude reduces them to objects, and by telling women to gain power through their sexuality rather than their personalities or talents, it teaches them to focus on their looks. Equating all situations where women are the objects of desire with empowerment has the effect of justifying objectification. Young women's sexual power is effective with both sexes. Advertisers know that and use partially clad images of young women to sell products to both men and women, Johnson writes. This statement ignores all the ways women are disempowered by advertisements that use their bodies to sell products. depicting them in passive pose isn't even presenting them as inanimate objects. There's nothing empowering about dehumanization. Furthermore, telling women their value lies in the ability to be desirable devalues women who are not widely considered sexually desirable. Women tend to lose their sexual power as they age, Johnson admits. If women's ability to get what they want is rooted in their demand among men, what about women who aren't in high demand? It's true that people often favor women based on their adherence to ages, races, sizes, and ableist ideals, but that should be challenged, not celebrated. Placing value on women based on, I'm sorry, I was just watching Instagram Live, you know, one of my big sisters is on. Okay, let me stay focused now. Placing value on women based on men's attraction makes those who don't possess the traits society considers attractive feel worthless, and it makes women of all appearances feel like objects. We should be prizing inner qualities, more importantly, the ability to provide or withhold sexual pleasure like strength and wisdom. And people should honor women's wants and needs regardless of what they look like or whether sex will ever be offered in exchange. 2, it feeds into heteronormative dating scripts. When we depict the ideal romance as one in which a woman's coyness balances out a man's aggressiveness, we depict non-heterosexual relationships as less than ideal. In teaching women that their leverage in relationships stems from their ability to exploit dynamics between men and women, erases those who don't date men. Besides, many women who do date men reject the heteronormative notion that men and women should play opposite roles. One, the sexual initiator, the other, the responder. There are many women who want sex as often as or more often than men. And regardless of sex drives, many couples simply don't prescribe gender roles for each other or view the bedroom and the other sexual settings as a setting for power struggles. Relationships are supposed to present opportunities to learn about ourselves and others, and that journey should be free. Instead of feeling confined to gender roles, people should feel safe enough in their relationships to play whichever role suits them at any given moment. When we repress traits that don't align with our gender's prescribed characteristics, we become less honest with ourselves and consequently with our partners, impeding both self-love and loving relationships. 3, encourages gender stereotypes. Despite evidence to the contrary, women are supposed to have lower libidos than men and are hence tasked with the responsibility of keeping men's sex drives in check. As Louis C.K. rather crudely puts it, women have the ability to decide whether or not to have sex with their minds. They get to look at someone and think, should I have sex with this person? I have never had that thought in my life. There's no criteria for us, just she's letting me. And now I know that name is a trigger for a lot of people because of what has revealed about Louis C.K. And I'm very sensitive to that, and that's why I had to just mention it just now, because I know that news and names can be bothersome for many people, and I do not take any of that lightly. This myth of the sexually voracious man and the picky woman who offers up sex only as a favor to men makes women feel unfeminine for wanting sex for its own sake or initiating it. It also makes women scared to ask for what they want in bed and the other sexual setting because they're not supposed to want much at all. This contributes to our society's prioritization of men's pleasure. When women are supposed to have sex to get something external rather than get something out of the sex itself, women's pleasure becomes less important. When we say that women have the power to select whether or not they, quote-unquote, let men sleep with them, we promote this harmful stereotype. We also imply that women in relationships where they want sex as often as or more than men hold less power than women who fit to this prescribed gender role. Women indoctrinated into this trope may initiate sex less than they want, and men may feel pressure to initiate it more than they want. Again, however, healthy relationships stem from our abilities to be ourselves, whether we meet cultural expectations or not. 4, it promotes rape culture. When a man approaches you, you're the one with total control over the situation. Whether he can talk to you, buy you a drink, dance with you, get your number, take you home, see you again, all of that. Steve Harvey writes in the famous self-help book, Act Like a Lady, Think Like a Man. Again, I don't have any feud with Steve Harvey. I don't know him personally, so I don't have a problem with him. But this perceived control comes with a price. Steve Harvey also writes, a man also wants something, always, and when it comes to women, That plan is always to find out two things. One, if you're willing to sleep with him, and two, if you are, how much it will cost you to get you to sleep with him. His use of quote unquote cost is no coincidence. Rather than having sex with someone because we like them and would have a great time, women are supposed to have sex in exchange for something. This economic model of sexuality has a hazardous implication. If a man pays for enough drinks or walks a woman home enough times, she owns him. When someone feels like they owe the other person, consent can't be given fully. Women's belief that they owe men sex may pressure them into bed in any other sexual setting before they're ready. This assumption also instills entitlement to sex in men and excuses sexual assault under the pretense that sex doesn't have to be mutual as long as the man is paid his dues. Another belief implicit in the women control men through sex tropes that men themselves cannot control their sexual urges. This stereotype contributes to rape culture by painting sexual assault as the result of biological discrepancies between men's and women's sex drives rather than an intentional violent act. This all may seem humorous when Steve Harvey and Louis C.K. describe it, but it's actually dangerous. 5, it encourages manipulation. In addition to implying that women owe men sex, the model of sex as an economic exchange applies that if a woman chooses to have sex with a man, he owes her something in return. Often in our culture, that thing is money. While women are expected to gift men with sex in exchange for material items, men are expected to financially support women in exchange for sex. When we believe women should withhold sex to get what they want, sex ceases to be an intimate, loving, healthily lustful act and becomes a bargaining tool. The bedroom and other sexual setting intends to battleground for couples of unrelated comments. My threat to withhold sex is when my partner drank something I didn't want him to do was one example of manipulative behavior. He knew I actually didn't mean it, but nonetheless I should have kept his sorry pickle milkshakes separate from other aspects of our relationship. Of course, it's always a bit of mind sex denying it in an attempt to alter partner's behavior. Even if it is upsetting, we try to lose this intimacy and feel like a loss of closeness, and it can pressure people into doing things they don't want to do in order to keep the peace. Using sex as a bargaining tool for bigger things like commitment gets even more fucking problematic. There's no problem with only having sex in a committed relationship, or even having sex with in a casual relationship. I'm just adding my two cents in there. There's nothing wrong with that either. But if a woman hangs it over a man's head to try to get him to commit, she is manipulating him. And his commitment isn't genuine. 6, it represses women's sexuality. A woman's sexual power is strongest before she has sex with a man for the first time, Johnson writes in Packers. In other words, if you have sex, you lose power. Act Like Lady promotes a similar mentality, advocating that women wait 90 days before sleeping with a man so they'll have bargaining leverage left when they want to get him to settle down. The book also promotes the stereotype that women are needy and try to push men to commit to them. According to this shitty logic, since men's motivation to please women stems from the promise of sex, women should hold out so men will offer them commitment and fidelity in exchange. As Papa said goes, why would you buy the cow and get the milk for free? Women are told the same story about absence as they are about dieting. Women are pure. Women are ascetic. Women don't have strong drives. Women can resist their desires. Anybody who thinks that is a jackass. Whether it's sex, food, or life experiences, societies view the ideal woman as undemanding and selfish. But whether it's sex, food, or goddamn life experiences, society's view of the ideal woman as undemanding and self-restrained pressures women to repeatedly say no. What if instead of telling women to say no to everything, we told them their power lies in asserting what they want, even if that means saying yes? What if we taught them that a respectful partner's feelings will not waver based on their sexual decisions, that their bodies are not treats rewarded to men for good behavior, but living, breathing entities housing human beings.
Some women may feel empowered by the notion that they could control a man by giving or denying him sex, but I feel powerful knowing my decisions about my body are my own, that any partner with my time loves me regardless of them, and I can freely express my sexual desires to be just as powerful as I wake up in the morning, you know, for love and healthily lust for me regardless of. Hell yeah. And I choose to say that we do a piss poor job of honoring women in our society. And so I had to conclude this episode with sex. I was like, you know what? This is the best way for me to take a break from the month, because now you fully understand more of why I decided to live a life of maturing in how I see and treat women. Because if I can see and treat women well, I can treat everybody else well, and I can see everybody else well. So, thank you for allowing me to now take my 1 month sex episode. I'll be talking about sex again on June 11, 2022.